Goto-sama. Abby meets Randy in the hotel lobby. He has burdened himself with a square, old-fashioned briefcase that pulls his slender frame to one side, giving him the asymptotic curve of a sapling in a steady wind. He and Randy take a taxi to some other part of Tokyo. Randy cannot begin to fathom how the city is laid out. Enter the lobby of a skyscraper and take an elevator up far enough that Randy's ears pop. When the doors slide open, a maitre d' is standing right there anticipating them with a radiant smile and a bow. He leads them into a foyer where four men wait. A couple of younger minions, Goto Furundanendu, and an elderly gentleman. Randy was expecting one of these gracile, translucent Nipponese seniors, but Goto Dengo is a blocky fellow with a white buzz cut, somewhat hunched and collapsed with age, which only goes to make him seem more compact and solid. At first blush, he seems more like a retired village blacksmith or perhaps a master sergeant in a daimyo's army than a business executive, and yet within 5 or 10 seconds, this impression is swallowed up by a good suit, good manners, and Randy's knowledge of who he really is. He's the only guy in the place who isn't grinning from ear to ear. Apparently, when you reach a certain age, you are allowed to get away with staring tunnels through other people's skulls. In the manner of many old people, he looks vaguely startled that they have actually shown up. Still, he levers himself up on a big, gnarled cane and shakes their hands firmly. His son, Furudanendu, proffers a hand to help him to his feet, and he shrugs it off with a glare of mock outrage. This transaction looks pretty well practiced. There's a brief exchange of small talk that goes right over Randy's head. Then the two minions peel off like a fighter escort no longer needed, and the maitre d' leads Randy, Avi, and Goto Pere Fil across a totally empty restaurant, 20 or 30 tables set with white linen and crystal, to a corner table where waiters stand at attention to pull their chairs back. This building is of the sheer walls of solid glass school of architecture, and so the windows go floor to ceiling, providing, through a bead curtain of raindrops, a view of nighttime Tokyo that stretches over the horizon. Menus are handed out, printed in French only. Randy and Abby get the girl menus, with no prices. Goto Dengo gets the wine list and pores over it for a good 10 minutes before grudgingly selecting a white from California and a red from Burgundy. Meanwhile, Furundanendu is leading them in exceedingly pleasant small talk about the crypt. Randy can't stop looking at Tokyo on the one hand and the empty restaurant on the other. It's like this setting was picked specifically to remind them that the Nipponese economy has been on the skids for the last several years, a situation that the Asian currency crisis has only worsened. He half expects to see executives dropping past the window. Abby ventures to ask about various tunnels and other stupefyingly vast engineering projects that he happens to have noticed around Tokyo, and whether Goto Engineering has anything to do with them. This at least gets the patriarch to glance up momentarily from his wine list, but the son handles the inquiries, allowing as how, yes, their company did play a small part in those endeavors. Randy figures that it's not the easiest thing in the world to engage a personal friend of the late General of the Army Douglas MacArthur in polite chit-chat. It's not like you can ask him if he caught the latest episode of Star Trek, more time-space anomalies. All they can really do is cling to Furudanendu and let him take the lead. Goto Dengo clears his throat like the engine of a major piece of earth-moving equipment rumbling to life and recommends the Kobe beef. The sommelier comes around with the wines, and Goto Dengo interrogates him in a mixture of Nipponese and French for a while, until a film of sweat has broken out on the sommelier's brow. He samples the wines very carefully. The tension is explosive as he swirls them around in his mouth, staring off into the distance. The sommelier seems genuinely startled, not to mention relieved, when he accepts both of them. The subtext here would seem to be that hosting a really first-class dinner is a not insignificant management challenge, and that Goto Dengo should not be bothered with social chatter while he is coping with these responsibilities. At this point, Randy's paranoia finally kicks in. Is it possible that Goto-sama bought the whole restaurant out for the evening, just to get a little privacy? Were the two minions just aides with unusually bulky briefcases, or were they security, sweeping the place for surveillance devices? Again, subtext-wise, the message seems to be that Randy and Abby are not to worry their pretty young little heads about these things. Goto Dango is seated underneath a can light in the ceiling. His hair stands perpendicularly out from his head, a bristling stand of normal vectors radiating halogenically. He has a formidable number of scars on his face and his hands, and Randy suddenly realizes that he must have been in the war, which should have been perfectly obvious considering his age. Goto Dango inquires about how Randy and Abby got into their current lines of work and how they formed their partnership. This is a reasonable question, but it forces them to explain the entire concept of fantasy role-playing games. If Randy had known this would happen, he would have thrown himself bodily through a window instead of taking a seat. But Goto Dango takes it pretty calmly and instantly cross-correlates it to late-breaking developments in the Nipponese game industry, which has been doing this gradual paradigm shift from arcade to role-playing games with actual narratives. By the time he's finished, he makes them feel not like lightweight nerds, but like visionary geniuses who were 10 years ahead of their time. This more or less obligates Avi, who is taking conversational point, to ask Goto Dango how he got into his line of work. Both of the Gotos try to laugh it off, as if how could a couple of young American visionary Dungeons and Dragons pioneers possibly be interested in something as trivial as how Goto Dango single-handedly rebuilt post-war Nippon. But after Avi displays a bit of persistence, the patriarch finally shrugs and says something about how his pop was in the mining racket, and so he's always had a certain knack for digging holes in the ground. His English started out minimal, and is getting better and better as the evening proceeds, as if he is slowly dusting off substantial banks of memory and processing power, nursing them online like tube amplifiers. Dinner arrives, and so everyone has to eat for a bit, and to thank Goto-sama for his excellent recommendation. Abby gets a bit reckless and asks the old man if he might regale them with some reminiscences about Douglas MacArthur. He grins, as if some secret has been ferreted out of him, and says,
"I met the general in the Philippines."
Just like that, he's jiu-jitsued the topic of conversation around to what everyone actually wants to talk about. Randy's pulse and respiration ratchet up by a good 25%, and all of his senses become more acute, almost as if his ears have popped again and he loses his appetite. Everyone else seems to be sitting up a bit straighter, too, shifting in their chairs slightly. "Did you spend much time in that country?" Abby asks.
"Oh, yes, much time. 100 years,
says Goto Dango, with a rather frosty grin. He pauses, giving everyone a chance to get good and uneasy, and then continues.
"My son tells me that you want to dig a grave there."
"A hole," Randy ventures, after much uncomfortableness.
"Excuse me, my English is rusty," says Goto Dango,
none too convincingly. Abby says, "What we have in mind would be a major excavation by our standards, but probably not by yours." Goto Dango chuckles.
"That all depends on the circumstances. Permits, transportation issues. The crypt was a big excavation, but it was easy because the Sultan was supporting it."
"I must emphasize that the work we are considering is still in a very early planning phase," Avi says. "I regret to say I can't give you good information about the logistical issues." Goto Dango comes this close to rolling his eyes.
"I understand,"
he says, with a dismissive wave of the hand.
"We will not talk about these things this evening."
This produces a really awkward pause while Randy and Avi ask themselves, what the hell are we going to talk about then?
"Very well,"
Avi says, sort of weakly lobbing the ball back in Goto Dango's general direction. Furudanendu steps in.
"There are many people who dig holes in the Philippines,"
he explains with a big knowing wink.
"Ah," Randy says, "I have met some of the people you are talking about."
This produces a general outburst of laughter around the table, which is nonetheless sincere for being tense.
"You understand, then," says Fur Denendu, "that we would have to study a joint venture very carefully."
Even Randy easily translates this to, "We will participate in your Looney Tunes treasure hunt when hell freezes over."
"Please," Randy says.
"Goto Engineering is a distinguished company, top of the line. You have much better things to do than to gamble on joint ventures. We would never propose such a thing. We would be able to pay for your services up front."
"Ah."
The Gotos look at each other significantly.
"You have a new investor."
"We know you are broke." Avi grins.
"We have new resources."
This leaves the Gotos nonplussed.
"If I may,"
Avi says. He heaves his briefcase up off the floor and onto his lap, flips the latches open, and reaches into it with both hands. Then he performs a maneuver that, in a bodybuilding gym, would be called a barbell curl, and lifts a brick of solid gold into the light. The faces of Goto Dango and Goto Furun Denendu are transmuted to stone. Avi holds the bar up for a few moments, then lowers it back into his briefcase. Eventually, Furo Denendu scoots his chair back a couple of centimeters and rotates it slightly toward his father, basically excusing himself from the conversation. Goto Dango eats dinner and drinks wine calmly and silently for a very, very long 15 or 20 minutes. Finally, he looks across the table at Randy and says,
"Where do you want to dig?"
"The site is in mountains south of Laguna de Bay."
"Yes, you already told my son that. But that is a large area of boondocks. Many holes have been dug there, all worthless."
"We have better information."
"Some old Filipino has sold you his memories?"
"Better than that," Randy says. "We have a latitude and longitude."
"To what degree of precision?"
"Tenths of a second."
This occasions another pause. Furu Denendu tries to say something in Nipponese, but his father cuts him off gruffly. Goto Dango finishes his dinner and crosses his fork and knife on the plate. A waiter's there 5 seconds later to clear the table. Goto Dango says something to him that sends him fleeing back into the kitchen. They have essentially a whole floor of the skyscraper to themselves now. Goto Dango utters something to his son, who produces a fountain pen and 2 business cards. Furu Denendu hands the pen and 1 card to his father and the other card to Randy.
"Let's play a little game," Goto Dango says. "You have a pen?"
"Yes," Randy says.
"I am going to write down a latitude and longitude," Goto Dango says, "but only the seconds portion. No degrees and no minutes, only the seconds part. You understand?"
"Yes."
"The information is useless by itself. You agree?"
"Yes."
"Then there is no risk for you to write down the same."
"It's true."
"Then we will exchange cards. Agreed?"
"I agree."
"Very well."
Goto Dango starts writing. Randy takes a pen from his pocket and jogs down the seconds and tenths of a second. Latitude, 35.2. Longitude, 59.0. When he's done, Goto Dango's looking at him expectantly. Randy holds out his card, numbers facing down, and Goto Dango holds out his. They exchange them with the small bow that is obligatory around here. Randy cups Goto-sama's card in his palm and turns it into the light. It says, 35.2, 59.0. No one says anything for 10 minutes. It's a measure of how stunned Randy is that he doesn't realize for a long time that Goto Dango is just as stunned as he is. Avi and Furu Denendu are the only people at the table whose minds are still functioning, and they spend the whole time looking at each other uncertainly, neither one really understanding what's going on. Finally, Avi says something that Randy doesn't hear. He nudges Randy firmly and says it again.
I'm going to the lavatory.
Randy watches him go, counts to 10, and says,
Excuse me.
He follows Abby to the men's washroom, black polished stone, thick white towels, Abby standing there with his arms crossed.
He knows,
Randy says.
I don't believe it.
Randy shrugs.
What can I say? He knows.
If he knows, everyone knows. Our security broke down somewhere along the line.
Everyone doesn't know, Randy says. If everyone knew, all hell would be breaking loose down there, and Enoch would have gotten word to us.
Then how can he know?
Avi, Randy says. He must be the one who buried it.
Avi looks outraged.
Are you shitting me?
You have a better theory?
I thought all the people who buried the stuff were killed.
It's fair to say that he's a survivor. Wouldn't you agree?
10 minutes later, they return to the table. Goto Dengo has allowed the restaurant staff back into the room, and dessert menus have been brought out. Weirdly, the old man has gone back into polite chit-chat mode, and Randy gradually figures out that he's trying to work out how the hell Randy knows what he knows. Randy mentions, offhandedly, that his grandfather was a cryptanalyst in Manila in 1945. Goto Dengo sighs, visibly, with relief, and cheers up somewhat. Then it's more completely meaningless chatter until postprandial coffee has been served, at which point the patriarch leans forward to make a point.
Before you sip, look.
Randy and Abby look into their cups. A weirdly glittering layer of scum is floating atop their coffee.
It is gold,
Futo Denendu explains. Both of the Gotos laugh.
During the 80s, when Nippon had so much money, this was the fashion. Coffee with gold dust. Now it is out of fashion, too ostentatious, but you go ahead and drink.
Randy and Abby do, a bit nervously. The gold dust coats their tongues, then washes away down their throats.
Tell me what you think,
Goto Dengo demands.
It's stupid,
Randy says.
Yes,
Goto Dengo nods solemnly.
It is stupid. So tell me then, why do you want to dig up more of it?
We're businessmen,
Abby says. We make money. Gold is worth money.
Gold is the corpse of value,
says Goto Dengo.
I don't understand.
If you want to understand, look out the window,
says the patriarch, and sweeps his cane around in an arc that encompasses half of Tokyo.
50 years ago, it was flames. Now it is lights. Do you understand? The leaders of Nippon were stupid. They took all of the gold out of Tokyo and buried it in holes in the ground in the Philippines, because they thought that the general would march into Tokyo and steal it. But the general didn't care about the gold. He understood that the real gold is here.
He points to his head.
In the intelligence of the people. And here,
he holds out his hands,
in the work that they do. Getting rid of our gold was the best thing that ever happened to Nippon. It made us rich. Receiving that gold was the worst thing that happened to the Philippines. It made them poor.
Then let's get it out of the Philippines,
Abby says, so that they too can have the opportunity to become rich.
Now you are making sense,
says Goto Dengo.
You are going to take that gold out and dump it into the ocean, then?
No,
Abby says, with a nervous chuckle. Goto Dengo raises his eyebrows.
Oh, so you wish to become rich as part of the bargain?
At this point, Abby does something that Randy's never seen him do or even come close to doing before. He gets pissed off. He doesn't flip the table over or raise his voice, but his face turns red. The muscles of his head bulge as he clenches his teeth together, and he breathes heavily through his nose for a while. The Gotos both seem to be rather impressed by this, and so no one says anything for a long time, giving Abby a chance to regain his cool. It seems as though Abby can't bring words forth, and so finally he takes his wallet out of his pocket and flips through it, until he's found a black-and-white photograph, which he pulls from its transparent sleeve and hands it across to Goto Dengo. It's a family portrait. Father, mother, four kids, all with a mid-20th century Middle European look about them.
"My great-uncle," Abby says. "And his family.
Warsaw, 1937. His teeth are down in that hall.
You buried my uncle's teeth."
Goto Dengo looks up into Abby's eyes, neither angry nor defensive, just sad. And this seems to have an effect on Abby, who softens, exhales finally, breaks eye contact.
"I know you probably had no choice," Abby says,
"but that's what you did. I never knew him or any of my other relatives who died in the Shoah. But I would gladly dump every ounce of that gold into the ocean just to give them a decent burial. That's what I'll do if you make it a condition. But what I was really planning on doing was using it to make sure that nothing of the kind ever happens again."
Goto Dengo ponders this for a while, looking stone-faced out over the lights of Tokyo. Then he unhooks his cane from the edge of the table, jams it into the floor, and shoves himself to his feet. He turns towards Abby, straightens his posture, and then bows. It's the deepest bow Randy's ever seen. Eventually, he straightens up and retakes his seat. The tension has been broken. Everyone's relaxed, not to say exhausted.
"General Wing is very close to finding Golgotha," Randy says, after a decent interval has ticked by. "It's him or us."
"It's us, then," says Goto Dengo.